Your Steve Jones Show podcast will start shortly. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Brewers Outlet, your beverage supermarket on Reagan Street in Sunbury. Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motor Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Welcome back. Happy Friday, everybody. Brought to you by Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street in Sunbury, the beverage supermarket. Imports, domestics, microbrews, best selection of beer anywhere. Wine coolers, water, soft drink, snacks. They roast their peanuts. Fresh and out every day. And the pickle bar, led by the barrels of the Dills. Indeed, second to none at Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street in Sunbury, the beverage supermarket. 2 weeks from today, Christmas Eve. 3 weeks from today, New Year's Eve. Stock up now at Brewers Outlet. And not only that, you're looking around saying, oh, I still got a few more gifts to give. What do I do? Brewers Outlet gift card. That'll answer all of your concerns, and it'll make the people that get the gift happy. Solves everything. A Brewers Outlet gift card. All at Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street in Sunbury, the beverage supermarket. We're in the Sunbury Motors studio. Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, Kia, Routes 11 at 15 Hummels Wharf. Online at sunburymotors.com. Ford, Kia, Hyundai. How about that for new inventory? Great pre-owned inventory with the Sunbury Motors Guarantee. Your trade-in's never been worth more. Great sales staff to work with you. And a service department that is just outstanding. Routine. Difficult inspections. They do it all at Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Kia, Routes 11 and 15, Hummels Wharf, and online at sunburymotors.com. Play-by-play call of the day. Steph Curry is closing in on Ray Allen's all-time three-point record.
Curry off the feed from Green, out to a wide-open pool. Curry gets it back. Great pump fake, and there's his first one. Bielitsa drives the closeout. Curry with seven on the shot clock. Tough step back. Got it. Right now trailing by two. Out of the timeout. Wiggins down low against Little. Back out to Curry for three. Got it. That's his third one of the night.
You got to make sure. Everything else is a setup. You fall asleep. Draymond Green is so good.
Did some great prep over the summer. Good pass to Curry. Green with an improved diet and footwork. Curry went from the corner. No foul.
How are you? Good to talk to you again.
It's great to talk with you, Tony. Great. A lot to cover here. A lot.
The world went crazy. Yeah, it's only been 6 weeks, and college football is drunk, and the IOC is doing crazy things, and tennis players are disappearing. It's crazy.
It's unbelievable. So let's start with the, quote, China issue. The United States, there'll be no diplomatic presence. I'm like, you know, something tells me China's listening, and they go, oh, my God, really? oh, no. What do we do now? But there have been some people that have talked boycott. Nobody's going to boycott. What is the economic impact for China, and have any companies backed away because it is China?
So I will answer the question with the business hat on and not with my moral and ethical hat on.
So yes,
what I am saying is what is going to happen and how they're considering it, not how I would consider it. So
right.
That's my form of qualification.
Yes.
This, much like you're never going to hear LeBron James say free Hong Kong because he has too much economic interest in it, you're never going to hear NBC or the sponsors pull away from the China Olympic Games simply because you've got Paris, you've got Los Angeles, you've got Milan, you've got massive games upcoming that are economic just booms, and IOC knows it, probably why they played it that way and picked the cities and countries that they did. So despite the fact that I think everybody, you know, with a cold mic that wouldn't be tracked would say that they would like to do things differently and, you know, possibly put some pain on China. They do know that if they do that, the IOC has shown that they are incredibly, that they operate like the mob. And if you do something like that to them and to the host city that they chose, there's going to be consequence for it in the future. So as much as we'd like there to be this movement about human rights catastrophes that are happening and to see brands, you know, just pull away completely, they're just going to try to quietly distance themselves in the hopes that they can capitalize on the three big games that are coming.
All right, so let's start with something I think people don't realize. You and I both know this. Beijing, by a 44-40 vote, beat out the only other bidder, and that was Kazakhstan. This was not a games that was heavily bid on. Everyone thought Oslo would get it, and they backed out. Is this, since then, it's been, okay, Paris, L.A., they're going to split. They got Milan. Right, so they've got the next three, and we already know where 32 is going. It's going to Brisbane. Yeah. It seems like the IOC has been very careful about selection and not bidding between now and 32. Is that fair?
Yes, because I think there's a couple of things that have gone along with this, and I think we're seeing FIFA make a realization of this as well. You know, they always say never make a decision when you're in an extreme state, right? Never make a decision when everything's going so well, and never make a decision when things are going terribly wrong. When you know, FIFA and the IOC were flying high on the hog for a while there. They saw that this was an opportunity for them to maybe cash in and go to some more developing countries that were cash rich, that were willing to pay for this. So you have a World Cup that's in Qatar. You have an Olympic Games that was in South Korea and Pyeongchang. And then you have one that's back in Beijing, even though we were just in Beijing in 2008. I think they realized, you know, in that time span, as people started to fall off, as Boston pulled out of their bid because the city got sued, as Chicago, you know, their bid didn't really show the way they were hoping it to, that maybe it's time for them to start going back to some of the glamour ones and paint the games with a little bit better picture. What a lot of people don't realize is this is not new. This is kind of the way the games were going before the 1984 LA games
right.
changed the way the economics worked, and they started selling a bunch of sponsorships, and they showed that, hey, this could be an economic boom for the region. And I think they're getting back to that playbook right now, and that's why there's rumors about Salt Lake City coming back in, and cities that, you know, just 2, 3, 4 years ago would have said no, we're not interested in this.
All right, so let's shift from that, may return to it here, and let's get to the college football playoff. They're going to delay whatever they're doing till January, and it sounds like January is the last time they feel they can do something and have it be viable for 2024.
Yeah.
Okay. Now, the Alliance, which, you know, I'm not exactly in there. I don't get why why is the Big Ten doing it? I'm sitting there like going, who sat down and said, hey, this is a great idea? No, it's not a great idea. But they're saying, you would be content with 8. You and I both know, Tony, if you go to 8, ESPN already owns all the New Year's Six bowl games with contracts, so they're going to get no more money out of it. You got to go to 12 to get more money. Is that really the simple answer right there?
Yeah, I think, you know, again, I'm going to answer with what the business.
Yeah, I totally got it.
So what I agree with, right? Yeah, so right. Like you and I would both agree that, you know, hey, it makes more sense to have 12 or even go to what the subdivision has done, where they have a playoff that's economically viable, that crowns a national champion, that has, you know, conference champions go in. And it's very simple. You know, if we were starting from scratch, this is what we do. But we're not starting from scratch. We have a lot of economic debt, so to speak, that's tied to this system. And when you're talking about moving to 8, now you're talking about taking bowl games that have a lot of economic interest tied to them. They have, you know, financial obligations that are tied to local banks, local sponsors, local teams, all those things, and they're paid in by ESPN. And you're changing their value on a year-to-year basis. And that's how businesses are financed. If you're going to now go back and say, you know, if I was the Rose Bowl and I could say every year I have a big opportunity for a marquee game for Ohio State to play USC or for Penn State to play Washington, and now I'm telling you that my game is going to be a little undervalued every other year or every 3 years, that changes everything for them economically. That's built over time. So it's just not that easy to come in and say, this is the way we should do it, so let's go do it, because you have people who've created an entire business around it and they're living. And so you're right. What they're trying to do now, because you hear them talk about it, you hear Mike Bowen talk about it, you hear Slavik talk about it, and they say, look, we wanted to leak this to the public in advance so that we can kind of get ahead of the PR as we start to make that decision. I think what they're trying to understand is, you know, there's a goal that they have in place, and in order for them to get to that goal, they've got to walk through a lot of really just ugly public relations. it's going to come out as to why it took a while to do this. And I don't know if they have a stomach for it. You know, like the best analogy I would draw is, you know, I was talking to some guys who are involved in the Crypto.com Arena deal with Staples Center, and their SVP of marketing said something really interesting. He said, "We don't care what you call it. That's not the point of this deal. Right? If you don't call it Crypto.com Arena for the next 4 years, we don't care. We have a longer vision in this." And that's how they're looking at this. They're saying, look, we know this is going to be stinky for a few years, but we have to grease the right palms. It's not that much different than, unfortunately, the conversation we just had about the IOC in China.
Right.
Right. Like, yeah, we want to get to this 12-game playoff, but we're going to have to pay off some bulls and some people that maybe aren't the most outstanding along the way for them to walk away from, you know, business that they've been relying on for a number of years.
Well, what's interesting about this is that it's the you can do that with the home games in the opening round, then incorporate the bowls. I think that there's an appeasement level there. Now, but there's one. Let's get to the part, and you're very close to this. You know personally how I feel about the Rose Bowl. I don't like the Rose Bowl. I love the Rose Bowl. Okay, simple. I mean, I don't just like it. I love it. And all you have to do is go there once. You've been many times. I've been there three times. And you look around and go, you know what? This is what I grew up on. Yet in this, the Rose Bowl is an issue in the playoff as to how they fit in this. Is there any talk as to how it works and how the Rose Bowl continues to work in the structure of a 12-team playoff?
I think they know the chip that they hold, right?
Yes.
And I think there's a belief in talking to the people that I know who are involved in these processes, there's a belief that, well, maybe the younger generation doesn't have as much of an affinity to the Rose Bowl as like I do or like you do, right? And it's turning out that that's not the case. They actually do have an affinity to this, to the Rose Bowl parade, to the idea behind this. And that's what we're talking about. It's really similar to trying to balance the interests of where you're going to put the Olympic Games when you know that, you know, Paris is going to be a monster, but you can't have it in Paris every time because everybody has their hand out and they want it somewhere else.
Right.
So then you end up having one in Sochi, right?
Yeah.
And eventually Paris says, well, look, you know, we can just run our own events. And we're going to do just fine by ourselves. And that's the shit that the Rose Bowl is playing here.
Yep.
And they're playing it very well. They're saying, look, we're the granddaddy of them all. We know economically where we are on this. There's also a lot of community involvement in the Rose Bowl and money that goes into the community that's tied to it. So it's a really you do a really great job of kind of laying it out for the listeners. Yes, you know, even though when you sit down, you say a 16-team playoff makes all the sense in the world, it does, but we're not starting from zero. Right? We have all of these things in place.
Yes.
Now you have people who have, you know, they have more tradition, they have more money, they have more, and they have the ability to say, we'll do this ourselves, and really, really damage what you're trying to build.
Right.
And look, when they talk about the first home game being, you know, at the school, now you have the conferences arguing over, well, does the school get all the money or do we?
Right. Exactly.
Right? Well, you wouldn't have that home game unless you played and won our conference. So now, hey, USC, you're hosting the game. I mean, it comes down to, you know, the downfall of the Pac-12 and the buildup of the Big Ten.
Yeah.
Well, it's because back in the early 10s or in the mid-2000s, you know, the Big Ten understood what you were talking about. They said, look, we have premium teams, Penn State, Ohio State, Michigan. We know that there has to be an unfair balance of revenue share, money, et cetera, and priority that goes to those, because when they succeed, the entire conference rises with them. The SEC did the same thing, right? The Pac-10 didn't. The Pac-10 had Washington State and Oregon State coming in throwing a big fit, saying, no, we can't give priority to the LA schools.
Right.
And that's, we talk a lot here about the English Premier League. That's how they do it there. When you play in the English Premier League, you don't get the same amount of money for being, you know, the bottom of the table team that you do from the top. And it's not really based on how you finish. It's based on who you are as a club.
Right.
Arsenal, Chelsea, City, they get more money than, you know, Burnley and Crystal Palace and Leeds do.
Well, this is the Rose Bowl, to give everybody a little perspective. They are the masters. The year they looked at advertisers and said, you know what? We don't want to put you guys in peril for a year, so we'll just go it alone for a year. And they did it. Not many entities can do that. The Rose Bowl and the Masters can.
Augusta National can.
Yep.
Right? And that's why when people get so frustrated by this, and they're more frustrated, I was actually hoping that there would be a little bit different play out of the Big Ten, so you and I could be on the same side of the argument for a change.
Yeah.
The Pac-12 gets left out every year, right? So there's this argument that, like, hey, you know, you need more teams for the Pac-12 game. And I was kind of hoping that with the Big Ten being as strong as it was this year, there was going to be the argument that two teams did it.
Right.
And then a couple teams lost at the end, and that didn't play out that way. But you talk to anybody, and they see that argument, and they believe that it should be so simple. And then you start to lay out, like, well, you know, not much different than how the mafia approaches a neighborhood, right? You have a couple of stores you got to get out of the way, and they're making good money. Why would they want to join your alliance? Right.
Right. Exactly. All right. So now let's shift gears now to they're not being hurt at all by being locked out, but because they aren't playing any games. What kind does Major League Baseball understand the dangerous game they're playing right now with the fans? That they are they naive enough to think that they're so wildly popular that they can get away with missing some games, parts of games, parts of a season? I mean, are they that delusional?
I'm going to get in trouble here. Yes. Not all of them, but those in power, yes. Baseball has a belief, and, you know, they had a former head of MLB in there, Bob Bowman, who's since been removed. I would say dishonorably discharged, so to speak. he used to regularly give a speech that, you know, in 1950, the top three sports were boxing, horse racing, and baseball. Baseball is the only one left. And we always thought that that was an interesting way of framing this, because you're not really paying attention. You're saying, look, we have this massive growth and everything's going well, but you're not looking at your neighbors who are the NFL and the NBA and looking at their growth. You're not pacing with their growth. So there's still this old guard in baseball between owners and some of the people that are in the commissioner's office who do believe that, you know, that they have the ability to withstand this the way the Masters of the Rose Bowl do. And often they'll point to participation numbers with kids and that sort of thing, but they just kind of gloss over the ratings numbers. They say, oh, the ratings are good, and, you know, attendance isn't that bad. But when you compare it to the people on their block, it is.
Yeah.
And so I think that's the argument. I think the biggest problem that baseball has right now, and they've been talking about it, is just this understanding that if the game changed completely, they're way more reliant on younger players, and the younger players don't make that much money. And so they're trying to... The players want to bring this into the kind of agreement that a revenue-sharing agreement like the NFL, the NBA, and the NHL have. And baseball is not interested in doing that. So much like, you know, the bowl games, it knows to spite the face, but they know once they go there, they're never coming back. Right? Once you go to revenue share, you can't go back.
So that's right.
The way it is now. And where the baseball, where the listeners may not understand, is that baseball was more predicated on the RSNs than anybody.
Yep.
So RSNs are the regional sports networks, where the teams sometimes owned them or they partnered with them, and they collected all of the money. There was no national revenue share on the money for these regional sports networks. The regional sports networks are doing terribly now. They're in carriage wars with all of the different providers. You know, there's a lot of cities where it's even blacked out, where for here we couldn't watch Dodger games for 2 years unless you were Time Warner only.
Exactly.
And the Dodgers were playing in the World Series those years. And so the owners are looking at this, and the world is changing around them, and they don't like it. And so you ask, like, are they naive enough to believe this is the case? Yeah, they are.
Yeah.
And just like anybody would look at the college football playoff and say, 16 makes sense. Just like anybody would look at the World Cup and say, you shouldn't play it in Qatar. Just like anybody
right.
would look at that
exactly.
and say, probably shouldn't go to Beijing, right?
Nope.
You just have all of these things that push them on the business side into making poor decisions, which are generally based on greed and money.
I'm shocked that you would say that. I can't believe you'd actually come to that conclusion. All right, I do have to close out with this. I'm looking forward to a fun day when it's James Franklin on one sideline and Lincoln Riley on the other. Because how happy were you as a USC guy that suddenly they said, you know what, Mike Bone is going to get Lincoln Riley to be the head football coach at your school?
Saw that coming. I certainly did. I wanted Franklin, to be honest, because I just like him as a person, too.
Oh, he's phenomenal.
You guys locked him up with that long-term deal. I think his buyout's like $50 million now. Yeah. So he's not going anywhere.
Right.
The one I'm really excited about, and I think what's gotten a little bit glossed over as college football's gotten drunk, is Lincoln Riley's Trojans are opening the season against Brian Kelly's LSU Tigers in 2024 in Vegas.
Oh.
So each team will have 2 years to rebuild. It's going to be fun to actually matter. This team's been so bad for so long.
Right.
It'll be nice if they actually matter again.
Well, they're going to matter. No doubt. All right. So let's rectify a major mistake, and let's not take this long between conversations.
Absolutely. Yeah, anytime. I love coming to talk to you guys.
Yeah. Tony, thanks so much. Happy holidays to you and that beautiful family of yours. My goodness, getting bigger.
It's so fast.
Yeah. Tony, thanks so much. Happy holidays, my friend.
You too, you and yours. We'll talk soon.
Tony Knopp, Mark Logerich, final half hour on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
Party time, game time, or just fun time. Doesn't matter what time it is, because it's Brewers Outlet time. The Beverage Supermarket has the area's largest beer selection. Imports, microbrews, ciders, and domestics. Pick from over 100 ice-cold 12-packs and dozens of 24-ounce singles. Soda, snacks, hot sauces, fresh roasted peanuts. Make it one-stop party shopping, and don't forget the pickle bar. So whatever you're celebrating or just doing it up, Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street, Sunbury, wants to see you. And thank you for your years of patronage.
When it comes to car buying, there's the other guy's way, and then there's the SMC way. The other guys force you into a vehicle you really don't want. The Sunbury Motors way lets you take the time you need to browse, ask questions, and take the test drive and think on it. For over 100 years, the Mertz family and all their employees have made your experience the most pleasant one you'll ever have. The other guys won't offer you the best price for your trade, no matter how much they say they will. The SMC way is their promise to provide you with the most money the market shows your vehicle is worth. The SMC way is to offer you all applicable factory rebates on new vehicles and generous discounts. Looking for a pre-owned vehicle? The SMC way checks each vehicle in a 200-mile radius to determine the lowest price, then beat it. It's the lowest price promise, just part of the SMC way. The choice is up to you, the other guy's way or the SMC way. The SMC way wins every time. Sunbury Motors Company in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza, Sunbury, and at sunburymotors.com. Selling more cars and satisfying more customers for over 100 years.
Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Welcome back. Final half hour of the show brought to you by Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street in Sunbury, the Beverage Supermarket. Imports, domestics, microbrews, best selection of beer anywhere. Wine coolers, water, soft drinks, snacks. They roast their peanuts fresh and hot every day. Six great flavors of slushies. And the pickle bar, led by the barrels and the dills, indeed, right there on Route 45. Join me, okay? Second to none. All at Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street in Sunbury, the Beverage Supermarket. And let's solve that gift-giving problem right now. Okay, we got Christmas Eve 2 weeks from today. New Year's Eve is 3 weeks from today. So you want to make sure you're fully stocked. I mean, I don't care if you're going someplace, you don't want to go empty-handed, or people are coming over to your place. You want to make sure you're fully stocked. So you go to Brewers Outlet. But now you're looking around saying, oh, man, I'm getting to the crunch time in that last-second gift. Brewers Outlet gift card makes you feel great, makes the person that receives it even better. All right. It's all at Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street in Sunbury, the Beverage Supermarket. And we're in the Sunbury Motors studio. Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, Kia, Routes 11 and 15, Hummel's Wharf. Online at sunburymotors.com. Ford, Kia, Hyundai. Best in new inventory. Great pre-owned inventory with the all-important Sunbury Motors guarantee. Your trade-in's never been worth more. Sales staff does a great job of working with you. They want to save you money. And a great service department. Tough, routine, inspections, whatever it may be, they'll take care of it. It's all at Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, Kia, Routes 11 and 15, Hummel's Wharf, online at sunburymotors.com. With that, let's bring in the outstanding Mark Logerich from SI.com. Sir, welcome back. It is always a pleasure, my friend.
Appreciate it, Steve. Thanks so much for having me.
Well, Jack and I were literally just talking about this on the phone about how.
Wait, I have to follow Jack Ham now. Okay, bye. Sorry.
it was a private conversation. it wasn't an on-air conversation.
Okay.
But we were saying about how it broke Penn State's way, and I think actually not going to this game for 11 years is what really broke in their favor.
Oh, to the Outback Bowl. Yeah, it was funny because I got a friend of mine had like reached out to me late last week and said, could Penn State go to the Outback Bowl? I heard that they could potentially go to the Outback Bowl, and I really honestly dismissed it because I said, yeah, that's not, I don't see how that's conceivable. I had it in my mind, though, that Wisconsin was 9-3. Once I checked the standings, saw they were 8-4, and I started thinking about it. I thought, absolutely, why not? Especially, you know, put three teams in the playoff, which are in the New Year's Six games, the playoff and the New Year's Six games. Iowa then to the Citrus Bowl. Why couldn't they? You know, with your pool essentially for the Outback Bowl and the following bowls being Wisconsin, Penn State, Purdue, Minnesota. It's a great landing spot there. With having really kind of, I guess, essentially competing with Wisconsin for that spot, are they better positioned to go to Wisconsin or to go to Las Vegas being the hour earlier? That was one of the things that always struck me is anybody from Penn State really behind the scenes kind of giving a little pause to the idea of playing a game that might end at 2 a.m. on the East Coast?
Right.
I thought that might be kind of a mitigating point, and like you said, 11 years since going there, the games that I've been doing, the Outback Bowl, have been really well represented by Penn State people, and I think this energizes the fan base that that having had been disappointed by the end of the season.
Yeah, no, I think it does. I think it gave everybody a little extra jump. We're like, okay, which is
gave me a jump.
Yeah, I mean, what the heck? I mean, I already checked the advanced forecast. Going to be in the low 70s. So I'm like, I'm good. Tell them to kick it off. I'm ready.
Exactly. And it's a great matchup, too. It's first-time matchups in bowls are always really interesting to me. Arkansas seems like, I hadn't seen a lot of them, but I saw a little bit of the game against Alabama. Took them right to that wire. And, that seems like a team really kind of headed in the right direction. Understand Pittman. So I like the way they put that whole thing together, and as you said, the way it came together in Penn State's favor.
Yeah, no, I agree with that. I think Arkansas is a team I kind of looked at 2 or 3 weeks ago as a possible opponent somewhere. So I've done a little bit of glancing at them along the way. He's done a heck of a job as a coach there.
Yeah.
I mean, Arkansas has kind of given up for a while.
Yeah, at one point I think they had reached number 8. They had a little bit of that Penn State in them early on, 4 games, reached top 10, and then you've got to run that gauntlet SEC schedule. I think it was, Georgia, Mississippi, Auburn in a stretch, or Georgia, Mississippi, Texas A&M, something like that, that they went into, a really brutal stretch of games. But having come out of the Georgia game, everything else really close. Texas A&M, I think it was a one-point game. Yes, like I said, Alabama. One possession game. So, first time games always interest me, especially with teams that have been playing football for, a long time.
Yeah. So, that's interesting. So I got to ask you, I thought watching, I'll start with Michigan, then I'll get to Alabama. I thought the Michigan coaching staff, to their credit, put two or three trick plays in the first quarter. After that big emotional win over Ohio State, Mark, you can tell they practiced something that was fun and different, which then changes the interest level, and I thought that was brilliantly played by them.
Yeah, I didn't consider in that perspective, but you're absolutely right, because we saw maybe a little bit of them, not to that nearly that extent. But, the receiver throw for the long touchdown. I mean, I thought they stayed true to who they were the last 2 weeks against Ohio State and Iowa, but blossomed a little bit, branched out a little bit. And I think you're right that I entered that game thinking, can Michigan sustain that level of having just beaten Ohio State for the first time in how many years? and then have to play another game that, you know, at that point is even more important, because then you, now you're playing for something even greater than the Big Ten title.
Right.
And I was just, like, thoroughly impressed with the way they followed one performance with another. I don't think you can say that about what happened in the SEC title game. On either side, Alabama looked like a completely different football team than the one that scored 3 points through 59 minutes against Auburn. Likewise, Georgia. There, Michigan did not look like a completely different football team those 2 weeks. It looked like it had, since that Penn State game, since they got that that kind of almost broken play touchdown to the tight end against Penn State, that play seemed to me almost to revive them in a way.
Yeah.
And send them on a curve, a curve back upward toward the end of the season. I don't discount them in any way in the playoff.
No. There's also something that history is a great teacher, and I probably should have considered this when looking at Alabama and Georgia. If you've noticed, when Alabama has lost, what has the opponent done in recent years? They broke 40. This year, Texas A&M, 41-38. Yep. There's no way Georgia scores 40 on that team. They can't do it with their quarterback.
Now, and then I wonder how they respond. From their perspective, would they have wanted the rematch in the playoff? I know the position that everybody from the outside takes is that there's no way that there would be a rematch, because you don't want that for television and fans and things like that. But with Georgia, how is Georgia now going to respond, having lost now, 7 straight games to Alabama, and having to stew over that for a couple of weeks, and then try to get into a mindset of playing a team that's thoroughly different in Michigan, but always looking like toward the horizon again as, we just get one more shot at Alabama. That is not a team to in any way overlook whatsoever. Because I think Michigan, the way they've risen could beat both those teams on a good day, on their better day.
Yeah, I agree with you. And I'm watching Bryce Young, mm-hmm. and the Georgia secondary is a weakness to begin with. But I'll tell you who was a gigantic disappointment in that game. It was the Davis kid up front. I mean, they ran him out of gas. They ran him out of gas in the first quarter.
Yeah, and the fact I'm just thoroughly blanking on the receiver, the Alabama receiver, Williams. Is that right?
Oh, yeah, Williams, who played Ohio State. Yeah, he played against Penn State.
From Ohio State. When you could go from, this is astonishing to me, and this is kind of, I think, is where James Franklin is looking, like, when he talks about stacking classes, that's exactly what he means, that if you can go from a room in Ohio State where you are not going to be the number one to leading the SEC, I think, in receiving yards, and having, being a number one in a place like Alabama, that's where those programs, they live in that ether that James Franklin said it a couple of weeks ago. It's not about just this 22 recruiting class coming in. We got to keep stacking them. We've got to be able to put guys in the field. So when somebody goes down, there's potentially a better player on the field waiting who just might not have the reps behind it, but just actually might be better than the guy in front of them. I see that in Alabama.
Right, and that's what they do. They do stack them. There's just no getting around it. And now with Mechie out, there'll be some other young guy that will step in and play in Mechie's spot.
Right, exactly. When you could flip, Jalen Hurts into a back-to-back years in big games, that sort of thing, you've got a recruiting edge.
So what do you think about Cincinnati in all this? Because they're going to get Alabama.
And I love the fact it's weird because I just have not been able to watch Cincinnati, so I don't know a ton about them. I think, quarterback-wise, would they have the second-best quarterback situation perhaps in the playoff? I mean, if you're looking at players who can – if you pick the quarterback that you think can win you a game, are they second among these four teams behind Alabama? I mean, it, it, could you make that argument? I don't know. I'm just really happy that they got in there, because I really believe that that element has to be preserved in college football. I just didn't want it to become, the playoff to become just a tiered format where it's not just the same teams every year, but that there's really no hope for teams like Cincinnati and UCF and Houston going way back, that their margin for error already is just so small that they've got to go into a conference title game and think, okay, we can't just win by two touchdowns. So them getting in, yeah, why not? Why can't they give Alabama a game playing in perfect mode?
Right. By the way, just a quick note for everybody. The last time Alabama lost a game where the opponent scored less than 40 was Auburn in the Iron Bowl in 2017, 26-14. It's the last time they lost a game where the opponent scored less than 40.
Yeah.
I mean, it's amazing. I mean, Clemson beat him, scored 44. Let's see. Auburn beat him, scored 48. LSU beat him, scored 46. Texas A&M beat him, scored 41.
Right. All with number one quarterbacks. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, those are the last losses they've had that you've had to score 40 against them.
Yeah.
To beat them. Wow.
Yeah, and who among the group is capable of doing that against Alabama?
None.
I mean,
zero.
Is Michigan the best position too? Maybe.
Maybe.
Yeah.
But that's only a maybe.
Right. Exactly.
I'm just throwing it out there so people understand. Like, what does it take to beat them? You got to score 40.
That's a great point.
Let's start with the basics. History is the greatest teacher. Obviously, Penn State will get to this game. How interested are you as to, Penn State's, obviously Micah Parsons opted out for a season, but nobody's ever really not played in the bowl game before. Which guys are you eyeing just to see what their decision will be on this?
I think the two most obviously are Jahan Dotson and Jaquan Brisker. Now, I've not really... I mean, I was, having interviewed Jaquan Brisker and seeing what the team means to him, I wouldn't put in a... I wouldn't make a guess on him. I got to know Jahan over the years, even covering him back in high school.
Yeah.
So, personality-wise, I don't know... I don't want to say what surprised me, because nothing... That's the wrong term for it. I could see him going, just Jahan in particular, I could see him going either way, and everybody respecting that decision going either way.
Yes, he will be respected no matter what.
Yeah. There really shouldn't be, I don't think there should be any discussion or just any objection to either decision that he would make. If he plays, if he wants to go down there and play and participate in this game, with a team, I would guess it would be something similar to what Penn State did with Saquon Barkley, digestible, and that he was, it was reduced reps. They brought him in. He had a couple of, 85, 90-yard carry or whatever that was. That
92.
Was Miles Sanders' game. Yeah, for the most part, I could see that being the same thing going on here. And you've got some young receivers who you want to give this opportunity. Even across the board, that could be, there could be more players. You see, even if they're going and they're there, maybe they're not as not as involved as much. With Jaquan Brisker, I think that's different because he's such not that Jahan Dotson is not a huge part of your offense, but Jaquan Brisker is so elemental to that defense, and I don't think they have the depth behind that to really fill that. To fill that safety spot, that role he brings. So if he's there, I guess he would probably play more. I'm looking forward to seeing who they bring out. Who are the guys? Who are the guys that are going to play? Is Christian Vayu going to get some more snaps?
Yeah.
In the bowl game, I think it'd be a great opportunity for him to to take some reps in that game as well. Because you want him going into this, you want him going into spring or winter workouts in spring with a head of confidence. thinking, they're a freshman quarterback coming in, but don't forget about me. Yeah.
Right. One last question. The first question James got yesterday, once he finally got on there, was about defensive coordinator. Yeah, about Brent to begin with, but the search for a DC. How interesting was that answer he gave?
The second part of it, to me, was the most interesting because, James Franklin knows he's going to replace coaches. It's not that that's just in this day and age, he absolutely knows that. So he's got his list. You know, he's probably had a list for a couple of years each time Brent Pry is, taking an interview or maybe he's got a step toward the door, that sort of thing. It was that second part when he said, he called it a significant loss. And this is, personally and professionally, I think for him, a guy he's known for 25 plus years, going back to, Eddie Stroudsburg, and been on the staff for 11 years. I think having that bond, that guy you can lean on, I'm going to say crutch, but that kind of guy you can lean on that assistant, that you can lean on who's not necessarily even an assistant anymore. I think he probably viewed Brent as an equal in their coaching room, and he was just happened to be the boss. I remember last year Brent Pry talked about later in the year about the first time he went over to James Franklin's house during COVID, and then it had lost a couple of games in a row. James's family's not there. He's going home to an empty house. And Brent kind of went over and they said, they almost like spent time crying together in a way, just kind of like venting about the situation and bonding in some ways about that. That, I think, is an underrated element of coaching sets. When you spend that much time with somebody over a decade and you fight with them and fight for them and celebrate with them and argue with them and that's now that presence is gone. You could be energized in some ways about who you brought in, but who's that guy you're going to want to text, that the first time when a recruit says, okay, we got him, that sort of thing. And or hey, even personally, you text something about, hey, my daughter got her driver's license. Maybe he's texting Brent about that sort of thing. So right. I think that, that is going to be a really, really, I think, something difficult for him to replace. And looking at it, that he probably doesn't even want to necessarily replace that. It's just now this is something new. And that's probably be the best way for him to look at it. That now you just, this is staff part two.
My friend, thank you so much. Appreciate you very much.
Yeah, happy holidays. Appreciate you having me on, Steve. I hope to see you down there.
I'll see you down there, but we'll have you on before.
Okay. Oh, no question. Absolutely.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks so much.
Yep, Steve.
Mark Wolverich, thanks for joining us today. Brought to you by Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street in Sunbury, the beverage supermarket on News Radio 1070 WKOK.